And now, Nocturne.
In tonight's bedtime story, two lovers indulge in a harmless game of bondage, surrender, and control. But when fantasy begins to blur with reality, one of them learns that the most dangerous prisons are the ones we willingly enter, and that some captors have no intention of giving back the key. This is The Possession. When Avery first felt the rope tighten around his wrists, he smiled. The apartment smelled faintly of roses and rain drifting in through the cracked balcony door. Ambient music floated through the room as Mara stepped behind him with the quiet confidence of someone who had practiced this countless times. "Comfortable?" she asked. He flexed his fingers. "So far." She gave the rope another careful pull, checking that it wasn't too tight. She was proud that her shibari skills had come so far that she could keep a man comfortably suspended in midair. "I told you I'd take good care of you." They had spent nearly 3 months getting to know one another before tonight. They met on a dating app, and unlike most of his matches, Mara wasn't in a big hurry. She preferred museums over bars, cemeteries over concerts, botanical gardens over clubs. She laughed softly, never interrupted, and seemed fascinated by every insignificant detail about him. "You still drive the blue Civic?" she asked on their third date. He didn't remember telling her what he drove, but he figured maybe she saw him drive up, even though she arrived a little later than he did. In that awkward moment, she smiled into her coffee. He stared at her lips and laughed. The conversation quickly shifted to things he was more interested in, like role-playing and the King Club membership that he was happy to finally try out with a partner, hopefully. Another evening, she mentioned the little bookstore he'd visited every Thursday. "You've been there?" he asked. "No," she answered quietly. "So how did you know?" She tilted her head. "I suppose I imagined someone like you would like it." It felt a little odd, but not frightening, just curious. Avery assumed she'd pieced things together from social media. People did that these days. Anyway, a little curiosity on her part was welcome, because now he was where he wanted to be, suspended from the ceiling in the master bedroom in her apartment, while elegant crimson fabric gripped his arms and torso in intricate geometric patterns. She stepped around him. "Beautiful." "You mean I'm beautiful?" he asked with pride. "No," she smiled. "My work." She circled him slowly, fingertips hovering just above the rope without quite touching it, admiring the symmetry from every angle. The crimson lines climbed over his shoulders, crossed neatly at his chest, and disappeared behind his back before converging beneath his ribs in a pattern that looked almost ceremonial. "I always thought rope was about restraint," Avery said. "It isn't. It's about attention." She traced the air beside one knot. Every wrap has to remember the one before it. Every knot depends on the last decision you made. If you rush, the whole thing collapses. He laughed. "So it's design." She looked genuinely delighted. "Exactly. It's art." He smiled, pleased that she'd borrowed a word from his own profession. For a fleeting moment, he forgot he was hanging from the ceiling. He forgot about the apartment, the ropes, even the vulnerability. He saw only a woman speaking passionately about something she loved. It was one of the reasons he'd fallen for her. When she finally rested a hand against the center of his chest, he noticed Her pulse was perfectly steady. His own was not. She brushed a loose braid behind her ear. I've waited a very long time for this. He assumed she meant the relationship. After all, he had noticed her from afar at the library months ago and quietly began watching, asking the staff harmless questions about her and trying to find her on Instagram. He got carried away, thinking about all the things he had dreamed of doing with her until she said, "I've imagined tying you up for years." Avery blinked. "Years?" Mara stared out the window as she picked up a long feather. Then, as if snapping out of a trance, she responded, "Well, not literally you, of course. Someone like you." He chuckled. She tightened the final knot. "There." He tested the ropes. They held him securely without causing any discomfort, yet something inside him suddenly felt a little too confined. He had been fascinated by BDSM literature for years, but this was his first experience with the practice. In his fantasies, he had always imagined himself as the one holding the ropes, the patient architect of anticipation, weaving a beautiful woman into an intricate web of trust and seduction. Mara, with her soft eyes and soothing voice, had effortlessly persuaded him to reverse those roles, assuring him that surrender could be every bit as intoxicating as control. He believed her. After all, vulnerability required trust, and trust was supposed to be the pathway to intimacy. Yet now, standing bound in the quiet apartment, the sensation stirred something deeper than excitement. The ropes seemed to carry a strange psychological weight, as though they represented more than a temporary gain. They felt oddly symbolic, less like fibers wrapped around his body than invisible threads reaching somewhere beneath his skin, fastening themselves to parts of him he couldn't quite name. I think I'm ready to come down now. In a minute. Mara? He quietly asked again. But she insisted. In a minute. Her smile lingered, strangely, but he chose to trust her. He had looked forward to this night for what seemed like forever. 5 minutes became 10. Avery shifted a bit to relieve a slight growing tension in his back. "My shoulders are starting to hurt a little." "I know," she whispered. "Can you untie me now?" "Soon." He laughed nervously as she stared at him. For the first time since they'd met, he felt her look at him not like a potential partner or lover, but like a collector, admiring a rare artifact. She went on, "I've dreamed of this." Avery's smile faded. She walked to a bookshelf and removed a leather journal and opened it. Inside were sketches. The man in the sketches looked a little like Avery, but he couldn't be sure since the pen strokes were intentionally blurry. That was her signature drawing style. And she did have a type. Who cares if the guy looked a little like him? She was so talented. But the guy in the sketches seemed to be leaving a building that looked a lot like his job. Though in real life, there was no river by the building, and there was a river here. The grocery store in another sketch was his favorite grocery store chain, but in a different location. The reading bench in the park sketch looked similar to his favorite one, but the trees were totally different. "I didn't know your name back then," she said, as if awaking from a dream. "But I knew you'd be mine someday." Avery, always the romantic, was all too eager to join in her wistful fantasy and added, "It was totally meant to be. You must be psychic. You knew me before you even knew me." In the morning, after they had breakfast, he convinced himself that her spiritual acumen, or something like that, had been the explanation for her unusual behavior. He wanted to believe it. And she had untied him, eventually, the night before. She apologized. She even cried. She admitted she'd become, quote, a little obsessed, since he made such a great impression with flowers and singing her favorite song on their first date. Who hadn't dated someone a little wild, he thought. She was a passionate person, and passionate people walk on the wild side. He wanted to walk with her. He forgave her, against every instinct. That was the part Avery would later replay the most. The moment he looked into Mara's tear-filled eyes and decided that whatever was wrong with her was worth overlooking for the thrill. His sister Caitlin disagreed. You found a scrapbook full of surveillance drawings and you're still seeing her? It wasn't a scrapbook. Oh, forgive me. She took another bite of her sandwich. It was an artist's portfolio documenting your movements. Avery sighed. You weren't there. I think she had some kind of breakdown. You think? She admitted she crossed the line. And? And she's getting help. Caitlin leaned back in her chair and reasoned. Joy, guilt, fear, those are all emotions. Obsession isn't. Obsession is a choice. Avery stared into his coffee. You didn't see how sorry she was. His sister reached across the table. I don't care. He looked up. Some people apologize because they understand what they did, she continued. Then she squeezed his hand. Others apologize because they almost lost access to the thing they wanted. Mara disappeared for nearly 3 weeks. No calls, no texts, nothing. Avery found himself wondering how she was. He hated that. He should have blocked her. Instead, he searched her name. Twice, then again the next day. He looked at old photographs from her social media. He reread old conversations. He even drove by the botanical garden where they'd had their second date. He told himself it wasn't stalking. He was simply concerned. And if it was stalking, hey, they were both guilty of it, so they were even. If he wasn't crazy for researching her old college buddies before their first date, she wasn't crazy either. If it wasn't too much that he watched her leave work a few times, it was no big deal if she really did know where he worked. If they were both crazy, maybe they were just crazy in love. One rainy Thursday evening, his phone buzzed. I'm sorry. Just those two words. Another message followed. I'm continuing therapy. He hesitated, then replied. I'm glad. Three dots appeared, then disappeared, then returned. Can we start over? They did. For a couple of weeks, he was careful. Public places only. No apartment, no rope, no secrets, no complications. At least, not the obvious ones. If anything, Mara seemed quieter than before. Gentler. She laughed a little less, listened more. Sometimes she'd stop in the middle of a sentence and look at him with an expression that almost resembled relief. As though, Avery later tried to explain, she was grateful I still existed. It should have unsettled him. Instead, it made him feel like the center of the universe. Then the thoughts began. At first, Avery dismissed them. Everyone thought about people they were falling for. A song would come on the radio and remind him of Mara. A woman in a crimson coat would make him turn his head. He'd catch himself smiling at some small memory of one of their conversations, perfectly normal. Except, the thoughts weren't always memories. Sometimes an idea would simply appear. Mara likes jasmine tea. He frowned with confusion. She had never mentioned jasmine tea. The next evening, while browsing a grocery store, he instinctively reached for a box. Only after placing it in his cart did he stop. Why did I buy this? He put it back. Or at least he thought he did. When he unpacked his groceries later that night, the tea was in the bag. These little incidents multiplied. Driving home from work, he'd suddenly take an unfamiliar exit. Not because he wanted to, because for a split second, it felt like the correct way home. 10 minutes later, he'd realize he was driving through Mara's neighborhood. He'd laugh uneasily. What am I doing? He turned around. Twice, he found himself parked outside her apartment with no memory of making the decision to go there. He blamed habit, loneliness, wishful thinking, anything but what it actually felt like. His friend James noticed first. You okay? What do you mean? You keep answering questions I never ask. Avery laughed. No, I'm not. James stared. I was thinking about ordering Thai food. So? So you looked up and said, Italian sounds better tonight. What kind of trick is that? Avery blinked. I did? You've been doing weird shit lately, dude. At work, the mistakes began. Avery had spent 12 years as a construction project manager. Precision wasn't just expected, it was instinct. He suddenly would catch himself labeling drawings with Mara's initials. M.A. He'd white it out. Again, it appeared. Then again. One afternoon, he signed his name on an inspection report, or at least he started to. While he thought he was writing Avery, his pen continued on its own. Mara. He stared at the page. He heard a chuckle from over his left shoulder. You signing love letters over there? He crumpled the paper and quickly threw it away to hide the fact that his hand was shaking. He decided to start keeping a notebook. Every intrusive thought, every lapse in memory, every coincidence. Tuesday, bought lilies. Don't remember deciding to. Thursday, almost called Mara instead of my sister. Friday, found myself humming a tune she likes. Don't remember hearing it recently. Sunday, he opened the notebook. The final line had changed, but the handwriting was identical to his own. Stop resisting. He hadn't written it, had he? He flipped backward through earlier pages, hoping to reassure himself that exhaustion had made him forget. Instead, he found more entries he did not remember writing. Wednesday, stopped at the florist. Didn't intend to. Bought lilies because they felt right. Saturday, kept hearing someone humming in the apartment, eventually realized it was me. Monday, dreamed I was walking through a garden. Couldn't see anyone, but every path eventually led to the same woman standing with her back toward me. She never turned around. At the bottom of the page, squeezed into the margin, in handwriting so small he almost missed it, were four words. You're getting much better. Avery slowly closed the notebook. He no longer knew which thoughts belonged to him and which ones had simply found somewhere comfortable to live. His sister wasn't convinced. Avery, you're exhausted. He insisted. I'm telling you, something's happening to me. Then see a doctor. This isn't medical. He rubbed his temples. Illness doesn't finish your sentences. Caitlin frowned. What do you mean? I'll start thinking something, and then the thought isn't mine anymore. His sister Caitlin just didn't get it. She was a chemist who lived in a world of science and logic. She got frustrated and stood to leave. "I can't help you if you won't help yourself." She stopped at the doorway before leaving. "There is something else, though."
"What?"
Avery asked. "I wasn't going to say it because I thought it sounded ridiculous." Avery waited.
"You've started smiling like her."
He frowned.
"What are you talking about?"
"You never used to tilt your head when you listened." She demonstrated the gesture.
"You do now."
He instinctively mirrored the movement, and Caitlin's face fell.
"See?"
Avery immediately straightened. His sister looked frightened now in a way she hadn't before.
"You're disappearing a little at a time," she whispered. "Why would you just let that happen?"
The apartment door closed behind her. For the first time, Avery wasn't sure she was wrong. The next day, the first time he noticed it, he nearly crashed his car. He had been thinking about pizza, but halfway through the thought, it changed.
"You should apologize tomorrow."
The sentence arrived whole, complete, not like something he'd reasoned toward, but more like something he'd overheard. He gripped the steering wheel.
"No," he said.
The word escaped aloud. A truck driver glanced over. Avery pulled onto the shoulder, his heart pounding. He tried to think of his favorite movie. Instead,
"Mara likes old black and white films."
"No, his mother's birthday."
"Mara's birthday is in October."
"No," he yelled. Every thought curved back toward her, as if the pathways inside his mind had been quietly rerouted. He stopped answering her messages, stopped visiting, blocked her number, deleted every photograph. For 2 days, he felt almost normal. On the third morning, he unlocked his phone. Her contact had somehow been restored. His call history showed a 43-minute conversation with Mara the night before, a conversation he didn't remember. He dialed his carrier. There had been no technical error. The call had happened. He simply couldn't remember making it. James came over that evening, and Avery showed him the phone records.
"You think someone hacked your account?"
"I think something's happening to me." James hesitated.
"When's the last time you slept?"
"I don't know." "When's the last time you spent a whole day without thinking about her?" Avery opened his mouth and nothing came out because he could not remember, not even for 5 minutes. Later, he drove to Mara's apartment, determined to end it. She opened the door before he knocked.
"I wondered how long you'd fight it."
"Mara, I am done." She smiled.
"No, you're not."
"I mean it."
"Oh, I know you do."
She stepped aside.
"You've meant it every time."
Avery froze.
"What does that mean?"
"Oh, you've left me 6 times.
6?
"You don't remember them."
A chill ran through him.
She walked to a bookshelf and removed a leather journal, then another, and another. Each one bore a year. Inside each, there he was. Not only sketches and photographs, conversations, preferences, the exact phrases he used, the jokes he repeated, the books he bought, before he bought them, the restaurants he'd eventually choose.
"You've been following me?"
She looked almost amused.
"No, I've been learning you."
She turned to the first page. The date at the top made his stomach tighten. 23 years earlier.
"I was 12.
"So was I."
"You didn't know me."
"I knew enough."
She closed the journal and asked, "You think thoughts belong to the people who think them?" Avery took a slow step backward. "They don't." "What are you talking about?" he asked. "Your thoughts," she explained, "are invitations." Her smile was almost maternal. "Most people ignore them. I don't." Silence filled the room. Then she spoke so softly he almost missed it. "I've always been able to plant very small ideas." Avery laughed, not because it was funny, but because it was impossible. "Like what?" "A preference, a hesitation, a curiosity. They're harmless at first, but someone entertains enough of them and their thoughts stop arguing." Her eyes met his, and she placed a hand on his cheek. She tilted her head, then went on. "It wasn't always this easy. When I was little, I could only do it for a few seconds." She walked slowly through the room as though remembering another lifetime. A stranger might suddenly crave a different drink. Someone crossing the street would change direction for no reason. Little things. She smiled to herself. "I thought everybody could do it." She looked back at Avery. "But then I discovered something. Affection leaves doors unlocked." She tapped one of the journals. "The more someone trusted me, the longer an idea remained." She took another step. "The more they confided in me." Another step. "The less they questioned where their thoughts began." She stopped only inches away from him. "People think intimacy means sharing a mind. They're wrong." Her voice became almost reverent. "Intimacy is giving someone the blueprint." Avery stared at her. She smiled gently and looked directly into his eyes. "And once I understand the blueprint, renovation is remarkably simple." Avery suddenly realized something that made his blood run cold. He couldn't remember the last original idea he'd had that didn't somehow lead back to Mara. Not because he loved her, because every road inside his mind now quietly curved in her direction. She turned away and gave him a moment to consider her revelation. For just a few seconds, he felt a sense of freedom and relief as she loosened her grip on his mind long enough to let him decide if he wanted to venture any further into the depths with her. Somewhere deep down, she too wanted to know if he would choose her on his own. But before his final answer would surface, she thought of the work of art she had mastered through so much patient cultivation, and she couldn't bear the possibility that freedom might undo what obsession had carefully created. She reached into his mind once again. The doubt dissolved. Avery smiled. "I've been thinking we should take a trip, just you and me," he whispered. Mara smiled. Not with triumph, with relief. Because love had always been far too unpredictable, too difficult to navigate with two people's ideas and opinions muddying the waters. But possession? Possession never left. And one mind was much easier to control.
I'm Inanna Joy, award-winning author, cultural commentator, and creator of the Garden of Evolution. Thank you for spending this time with me here in Inanna Joy's Sonic Garden, where we explore evolved love, sensual intelligence, freedom, and deeper human connection. If tonight's conversation moved you, challenged you, or expanded your thinking, be sure to pick up my award-winning book, Fuck Submission, Ending the Gender Wars for Good, available now on Amazon. And don't forget to leave a review later. You can catch me on Instagram with the handle @joyinanna and on Facebook as Inanna Joy. Or to learn more about me and read my blog, check out www.inanna-joy.com. That's www.inanna-joy.com. Until next time, follow your bliss to your purpose, align with your joy, and live well. I'll meet you again soon in Inanna Joy's Sonic Garden.
Time's been moving slowly, so we already in too deep. Can't get no sleep on each other, heavy teasing all day. And when the sun sets, you ask.